Oh, the privilege of worship, to start another week with God on our mind and blending our voices together as those who love Him. What a privilege it is to be here, even though our numbers are small. It's all about Jesus and our love for Him, and it's enjoyable to blend our voices together. Let's open up our Bibles together in Matthew, the 18th chapter. We'll begin there this morning in the 18th chapter of Matthew. And we have read these instructions several times together from verses 15 down through verse 20. How important it is that the disciples would follow these instructions. And in reference to the instructions that are given in verse 21, Peter came and said to them, saying, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me, and I forgive him up to seven times? I think Peter is being quite gracious. I don't know about you, but if someone wrongs me the same way seven times in a row, I might be very unwilling to forgive somebody. You probably are like that as well. I think Peter is being gracious, and of course the Son of God, he raises the bar considerably when he said in verse 22, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. And he begins to illustrate why he could raise the bar so dramatically. And by raising that bar, understanding what was behind it, I think it's going to help us out a great deal. The Son of God gave a parable to them, beginning in verse 23, saying, Therefore the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. Now, it doesn't matter what language you're in or what culture you're from, that is a bundle of money, so much that you probably could not raise that in a lifetime. He says, But as he was not able to pay, his master commanded that he be sold, and his wife and children, and all that he had, and that payment be made. The servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the master of that servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him the debts. That is what it's about. The master moved with compassion. It's an incredibly long Greek word that's there, but it comes from this root, splanchna. And the definition of that word, moved with compassion, is the idea as one that is emotionally driven. One that is so moved to the very core of his inwards. They use the expression, one that's moved with his bowels. We might have a different idea of what that means today. But the idea back in the ancient day, with the definition of that, is have a yearning deep, deep, deep within, as the bowels were thought of the place or the soul where love and pity takes place. The very center of one, moved with a yearning to relieve the afflicted, to relieve the miserable and the needy. To show kindness by helping or aiding or relieving a burden upon those who are burdened. And that is who Jesus is. That is His nature. That is His core. That is who He is. That is why He was able to say 70 times 7. And so for just a few moments this morning, let's consider five different groups that bring this illustration alive about our compassionate Master. And in a sense, since we are His followers, let's do our best to go beyond the seven times, but 70 times seven, being moved with compassion as our compassionate Master would have been. Now, one of the predominant themes of the New Testament is that the Son of God was so compassionate unto the masses. There, if you turn back a few pages in the ninth chapter and in verse 35. The ninth chapter, verse 35, Then Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was, there's our word, moved with compassion for them, because they were wearied and scattered like sheep, having no shepherd. And then he said to his disciples, The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. And we could see events like this in different places of the gospel accounts. The Son of God is one that's moved to in compassion towards the masses. He saw them as individuals that wanted direction, that needed to be fed, that we're trying to figure out where to go. He is indeed the Good Shepherd. He's the one that went teaching and leading and healing and providing for them in a way in which they could not provide for themselves. He is the compassionate Good Shepherd of the sheep. If you turn back with me to Matthew chapter 15 and in verse 29. Matthew 15 and in verse 29. Jesus departed from there, skirted the Sea of Galilee, and went up on the mountain and sat down there. Then great multitudes came to him, having with them the lame, blind, mute, maimed, and others. And they laid them down at Jesus' feet, and he healed them. So the multitudes marveled when they saw the mute speaking, the maimed made whole, the lame walking, the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel. Now Jesus called his disciples to himself and said, I have compassion on the multitude because they've now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat, and I did not want to send them away hungry lest they faint on the way. Our God cares for the masses, especially the masses that are interested in him. He truly cares for all people, but he would not send them away in a perilous state. He was one that was going to take care of them and provide for them. That is who we should be. We should be in the likeness of Jesus when the opportunity is there. We've been given a passage of Scripture that encourages us to think in this line. The Galatian letter, and in chapter 6 and in verse 10. A concluding remark, Paul said, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. We think about doing good to all. It's the idea of when I have an opportunity to be moved with compassion. I see that and I seize that opportunity. I'm a follower of the compassionate master. And so I need to develop a sense that is in that likeness. I really think that true, real, dedicated Christians, many Christians in a variety of congregations throughout the United States of America, they truly fit this model. That they are compassionate people, compassionate to the masses. Let's make sure that we're in that likeness as well. We think about being compassionate to the masses. The Son of God was also compassionate to enemies. You know, it's hard to be moved with compassion towards those who oppose us. The Son of God did that. He readily did that. And in the exchange, some of the most difficult and scathing words the New Testament reveals. The Son of God in that famous woe section in Matthew, the 23rd chapter, and in verse 33, he refers to them as serpents. He refers to them as a brood of vipers. How can you escape the condemnation of hell? That doesn't sound very compassionate. But in verse 34, we continue reading. He says, therefore, indeed I send you prophets, wise men, scribes. Some of them you'll kill and crucify. Some of them you'll scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city. That on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, son of Berechiah, whom you've murdered between the temple and the altar. Assuredly, I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. But yet we keep reading. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who sent her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, your house has left you desolate. For I say to you, you shall see me no more till you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Now, a lot of times we read verse 37 the wrong way, with the wrong emphasis. Verse 37 should be read as one that's angry. We usually don't read verse 37 that way. He is extremely angry with these men. But as you read that, there is a sense of, I didn't want to be angry with you. I didn't want you to be my enemies. I wanted to gather you under my wings as a mother hen would gather her chicks. But you weren't willing for such. The Son of God was willing to tolerate so much from these people. Because he was one that would be moved with compassion. He didn't want them to be his enemies. And he gave them opportunity and chance time and time again. Because he was one that deep down within him was a yearning to help even these individuals that were afflicted with their false sense of elitism and their arrogance and their pride and the sin that they had. I wanted to gather you together. I wanted to be compassionate to you. I wanted us to be on the same team. But you were not willing. I think about the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 9. He had a boatload of enemies as well as the Son of God. And in Romans chapter 9 in verse 1, Paul says, I tell the truth in Christ, I'm not lying. My conscience also bearing me witness in the Holy Spirit that I have a great sorrow and continual grief in my heart. For I could wish that I myself were accursed from Christ for my brother and my countrymen according to the flesh. Now, we've been studying in the book of Acts, and we see it throughout the New Testament, this adversity that Paul suffered. Much of the adversity came from the fleshly Jews, those that would have claimed to be a part of his own family, those that claimed to love God as he claimed to love God, and yet they would stand face to face against each other. And how often have we read about them wanting to kill the Apostle Paul? And it wasn't just the Jews, but it was the Gentiles. It was all kinds of people, all these enemies coming after the destruction of the Apostle Paul. But you can see a man that truly is deep down within him, a man that was compassionate even towards his enemies. He said in verse 3, I wish that I myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my countrymen according to the flesh. Basically, I would take their bullet. I would pay their price. What an amazing statement that Paul was making for those that would ridicule, that would scoff, that would mock, that would even try to come to his destruction. Because I'm convinced that Paul, deep down, was a very compassionate man. And he followed a compassionate master. Going back to the teachings of Jesus, so helpful for us, in Matthew the 5th chapter, there at the towards the beginning of the Sermon of the Mount, but some very difficult language, the Son of God said to the Jewish people that were listening to him, you've heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Well, they shouldn't have been hating their enemies. They had to fight their enemies. They had to stand up against their enemies. But the Son of God was trying to encourage them to learn the lesson of God to humanity. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. Pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. That you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good. He sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? If you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore you shall be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Jesus proved that, loving the religious leaders that were seeking his destruction. There on the cross saying, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. To the enemies that scoffed and sneered and mocked him as he hung upon the cross. The Son of God is trying to teach us to love our enemies, to bless those who curse us, to do good to those who hate us, to pray for those who spitefully use and persecute you. Yes, this is like advanced Christianity. We might call it that. This is not the basics. This is the hard stuff. But when one is moved with compassion, it can be done. But we have to be willing to allow our compassion to kick in and to motivate us. I think it will help us in the implementation of what's said in Romans, the 12th chapter. Romans, the 12th chapter. Some have called it the mini proverb section, the mini exhortation section of the New Testament, where there's just one exhortation after another for what we should do and who we are. If you get to the end of that, in verse 19, he says, Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it's written, Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you will heap coals of fire in his head. Don't be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. There is the reality that this verse imparts to us, is that being moved with compassion towards an enemy sometimes can overcome the evil of that enemy. And you've heard me tell the story, I think I told it just a couple of weeks ago, about the two Christian women that were, the two women that were competing for the job. And the boss hired the ungodly woman because she slandered the Christian. And the Christian, instead of retaliating, was a one that came and gave her some flowers and said, I'll be doing whatever I can to assist you in your new position. And it caused the evil individual that did those slanderous things to that sister, it caused her to break down, to realize she started a Bible study, and that evil individual was converted. She was overcome with the goodness of that Christian. Let's be compassionate to our enemies. It may be the very sauce that is needed to overcome evil with good, and we may do more good than we realize. Let us be compassionate to our enemies. The Son of God was, we need to be as well. Let's look at another area, and this is the area that I think is probably the easiest, the one that's the most obvious. Jesus was compassionate to the hurting. There in Matthew chapter 8, I have that famous statement that's so blunt. I think that's why I like it so much. In Matthew chapter 8, and verse 1, when he had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him, and behold, a leper came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you're willing, you can make me clean. Jesus put his hand out, touched him, and said, I'm willing. I mean, there's nothing that's dramatically theological about that. It's really simple. I'm willing. I'm willing. I am moved with your plight. I am willing, and the Son of God was willing. He was compassionate to those that were hurting. And there's the picture, some artist rendition of the time that Jesus went into Bethany with the death of Lazarus. And as he got closer and closer, first he encountered Martha as he got to the city, and that had to move him as she grieved. That she said, Jesus, if you'd have been here, my brother would not have died. Then Mary, she basically, when Mary got to Jesus, she just kind of wrapped herself around his feet in grief. And Jesus looked upon Mary and Martha and the people that loved Mary and Martha and people that I'm sure he knew quite well. They grieved, and that's where we have the passage, Jesus wept. Jesus was moved with compassion. He was an individual that displayed his emotions. And we should be people that display our emotions. We should be touched by the grief and the hurt of others. As Christians, that should be our responsibility. We need to do that. We need to exemplify that. We need to be teaching our children to be like that, to be moved and touched by the grieving of others, the hurting of others. We need to be people that are of natural affection, not without natural affection. Now, it's interesting. A stranger came up to Jesus. I don't know who the guy was. If you're willing to heal me, you can. I'm willing. And I think about the idea of what if a stranger approaches us? A stranger that's hurting. Would we have that same mentality? Well, Jesus dealt with that story. Remember, they ask him the greatest commandments in the law, to love your neighbor as yourself. And the scribe said, oh, Lord, who's my neighbor? Remember the answer? He gave them the story of the Good Samaritan. The story of the Good Samaritan. The story of the man that was basically in the middle of the road dead, and the Levite passed by and the priest passed by. But this Samaritan did not pass by. Here's someone that's hurting, someone probably near death out in the middle of the road. And so he goes and he takes care of him. And Jesus pointed to that Samaritan and said, Jews, you need to become like this man. This man was moved with compassion towards someone he did not know, towards a stranger. And we read that story so often is because I know I question myself, maybe you question yourself, would I relate to that Good Samaritan? When I see someone that has a need like that, am I the type of person that goes and gets involved in it, or do I walk by on the other side? I think that's what Jesus is trying to teach us. We're not people that walk by on the other side. We're people that we do come to the aid of our neighbor. Because deep, deep down, we are moved in pity and love towards our fellow man. It's the kind of people that we should be. Look at the fourth. Jesus was compassionate to his brethren. He truly was. And the theme a little bit has been like a shepherd to his sheep. And I appreciate Chris for leading that song that talked about the good shepherd. And there in Matthew chapter 10, John chapter 10, we read about the story of the good shepherd. And we've read this passage several times in John chapter 10, and we'll begin in verse 14. In verse 14, the Son of God simply came out and said, I'm the good shepherd, I know my sheep, I'm known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep, and other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also I must bring, and they will hear my voice, and there'll be one flock and one shepherd. Therefore, my Father loves me because I lay down my life that I may take it again. Son of God is willing to voluntarily lay down his life because he sees sheep. He's concerned about the sheep. He's ones that are able to look at the lost sheep of Israel, and he doesn't want them to be lost anymore. He considers them to be a precious cargo that needs to be fed and cared for and led. That's what a good shepherd does for his sheep. One of my favorite passages that kind of help relay these thoughts to my mind is back in 1 Peter chapter 3. In 1 Peter chapter 3, as I think about him being the good shepherd that cared so much for his sheep, in verse 8 of 1 Peter chapter 3, "Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous. Not returning evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, blessing, knowing that you are called to this, that you may inherit a blessing." This is what we're called to. It's very true. We focus a lot on doctrine. We preach a lot on doctrine. We've got to get the doctrine right. There's just no doubt about it. We've got to understand what the church is and the requirements for those that are members of the church and how the church is built. We need to teach people exactly what the church is and all the various rules that are given in the New Testament concerning the church, the function, the work, and the worship of the church. We need to spread that. A lot of people don't know it, but we also need to be focusing on ourselves personally with our attitude and our emotions. And the writer is telling us this. Part of that is being compassionate for each other. Part of it is loving each other as brothers and sisters. Being tender-hearted towards each other. Being courteous towards one another. That's the idea of being kind and smiling and generous and happy and glad to see you. There's a lot of Christians and a lot of congregations that don't act this way. And it ought not be that way. I'm not saying anyone particular that I'm looking at in this audience. Yet I have been around to a lot of different places. And you've gone to places that they seem cold. And it's like there's a few people that come and say hello, but hardly anybody ever comes and says hello. Or you go there and you try to develop a relationship, and people don't want to develop relationships. There are congregations where they've not been into each other's homes. They've not spent time with each other. They hardly say anything to each other. And that's just not the way of God. That's not the way of Jesus. That's not who we're supposed to be. We are supposed to be compassionate and courteous and tender-hearted one towards another. Sometimes that just doesn't happen among the congregation. It ought to. We ought to be compassionate as our Master was compassionate to His brethren. And then, of course, there is the last point. You figured I'd probably land on this one. Jesus was compassionate to those who were lost in sin. And that's the famous story of wee little Zacchaeus in that sycamore tree. That story that our children love. Jesus just seemed to pick Zacchaeus out of everybody that was there. The one that was small, the one that was short in stature, the one that was a tax collector, the one that the Pharisees said, "Oh, Jesus, don't go there. Don't you know that guy's a sinner? How dare you talk with him and eat with him or have any type of relationship with him?" Zacchaeus comes down from that tree and said, "Lord, if I have failed you, I'm sorry. I want to make things right." And Jesus said, "Hey, he's a son of Abraham too. He's been created. He's got a soul. Don't you care, Israel? Don't you care, leaders of Israel? He has a soul." Well, Jesus came to seek and save Zacchaeus. And he came to seek and save me and you and all of us. That's what compassion is all about. In Matthew chapter 18, let's finish there. Matthew the 18th chapter. And go back to verse 11. Matthew chapter 18, verse 11. That's where all of this got on the roll. When we read there in Matthew chapter 15, those particular commands, and Peter had asked, "How many times should I forgive someone that's failed me? Up to seven times." The Son of God had just said to them, "The Son of Man has come to save that which was lost." What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep and one of them goes astray, does he not leave the 99 and go to the mountains to seek the one that's straying? And if he should find it, assuredly I say to you, he rejoices more over that sheep than over the 99 that did not go astray. Even so, Even so, it is not the will of your Father who's in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. That's how God feels about a soul that turns to Him. God is seeing one that's lost and one that's saying, Lord, I want to come back. I want to come home. I want to make things right. I'm lost, but through your power I can be found. That is what the Lord still seeks in our generation. The Lord is still looking for the lost. He is moved with compassion towards those who have sin on their soul, that have come to the realization, I need to come back to God. And so He's asking for you to quit straying. He's asking for you to come home. Is there sin in your life? Humble yourself. Be willing to confess your sin, my brothers and sisters. Turn away from that sin. Rededicate. Reinvigorate your life. The Lord seeks to save your soul. If there's someone in the audience that would like to make that decision, if you would, please come. Have a seat at the front. Let's take care of your spiritual need as Chris will lead us together in this song.